That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Meredith is behind the glass. She's not taking your phone calls, but Matt Crawley is. Coming up at 1 o'clock, get ready. The big trio, Kevin Stefanski, Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett. We're expecting to hear from all three of those gentlemen, and you'll hear it right here on 92.3 The Fan. And before we went to break, I mentioned Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah.
And you know, we've had a lot of Shedeur Sanders talk, and he's clearly very intriguing. I think that Dylan Gabriel is the dark horse here in every which way. But before I get into why, we've got to follow something here.
In accordance with the Radio Act of 1927, equal time for Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah, we've had way too much Shedeur talk, so we have to do this. 3 years at Central Florida for Dylan Gabriel. The third year he was injured and played in only three games. Then he entered the transfer portal. He actually committed to UCLA to play for Chip Kelly. But the day before his first online class in January of 2022, he got a call from former UCF Central Florida offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby, who's now at Mississippi State, who was at Oklahoma, telling him that Caleb Williams was transferring to USC. So Dylan Gabriel had never visited Oklahoma, had never met the head coach, Brent Venables, and decided to go to Oklahoma. He left the idea of going to UCLA the day before his first online class and went to Oklahoma sight unseen.
Where would you have gone?
Probably Oklahoma, because my former offensive coordinator was there.
Oh, you're putting it in that perspective. I just say if I had to choose, I'd go to UCLA. That's just me, though. Westwood's fun.
I'm not a big LA fan. So there's some great Dylan Gabriel things for you.
Too many distractions, though, in LA.
Why do I think Dylan is the overall dark horse here? It's because of not just his productivity in college, where he's, number one, tied with Case Keenum for passing touchdowns in a college career, and he's number one or two in the yardage. Those things happen. And the guys he's up there with were guys who were products of big passing offenses in college and might not have had a whole lot of success in the pros. The touchdown list, Case Keenum, Kellen Moore, now the head coach of the Saints, Graham Harrell, Sam Hartman, Colt Brennan. You know, so names that don't light you up for the NFL. But Dylan Gabriel really took care of the football and was really productive in college. And that makes me think that he wasn't just taken in the third round by accident. You know what I mean? That they really liked him. They liked a guy who threw for over 3,100 yards every year. He played full year in college, and he played five of them, and threw at least 25 touchdowns every year, and was in the 30s in three of his years, and barely threw interceptions. His interception totals in the years that he played a full year, 7, 4, 6, 6, 6. I mean, he protected the ball. Now, he's driving a big-time sports car. And he's at Oklahoma, then he's at Oregon.
Right.
He's playing for really good teams. But those numbers make me think that they sought him out thinking, wonder if we can get past 5'11", his height. And if we can get past 5'11", and this kid can do some of what he did in college at the pro level, maybe we become one of those rare teams that finds a really good quarterback after the top half of the first round.
Yeah. Does this mean anything? I love playing. You love this game. I'll give this to you. So at the Senior Bowl, you know, he set a record for velocity. 74.9 miles per hour. Does that mean anything?
If I recall correctly, other than I think it was Brett Favre, the biggest velocity at the scouting combine of all time, Dorian Thompson Robinson.
Yeah.
So I'll say it doesn't necessarily mean anything except for one thing. Dylan Gabriel has the productivity to go along with a pretty strong arm.
But everyone wants to rip his height.
Well, and Andy, for obvious reasons. I mean, there are not a whole lot of 5'11" quarterbacks who have thrived in the NFL. You know it, I know it, the Browns know it.
He's intriguing. It's really intriguing. I still sit here and ponder, what if Sanders was drafted before Gabriel? And then what would the situation look like?
Well, I think it would be Sanders. I mean, the draft position is something you don't ignore. I mean, there's a reason that the Browns took Gil and Gabriel before they took Shedeur Sanders.
They liked him more. Yeah, but it sounds like the Browns have gone out of their way to make you think that that doesn't matter, that whoever the best quarterback for the job is going to win the job.
Well, sure, now. But they ran the risk of not getting Shedeur Sanders in here for multiple rounds, Andy. I mean, it's clear they prefer Dylan Gabriel.
I don't see a world, though, where the Browns don't give Sanders some opportunity.
Without question, you're right.
To lead this team this year.
Yeah. Sure, because he's here now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can't ignore the draft position on that. Chris said that he really liked the running back position. Do you like the running back position?
Yeah, I like Quinshon Judkins. I was happy.
You watched more of Ohio State than I did.
Yeah,
he's doing stuff with the Buckeyes.
Well, he's a bullet coming out of the gun, and he's strong, and he can get through the line. But he did that in college. I want to see what that looks like in the pros. Sometimes that transition, that what you see in college, doesn't translate to what we're watching in the pros. So Judkins has the opportunity to do that. Dylan Sampson's fantastic. You know, I think Ohio State fans got cheated because he got hurt for the playoff game. But I'd like to I should say Browns fans maybe got cheated if they wanted to have some more evaluation on Dylan Sampson. But I think we're in a position where one of these guys is going to stand out, and maybe we see who the next Nick Chubb is. I'm still bummed Nick's not here. And I am very much gun-shy about, you know, the opportunity he may get somewhere down the road. Someone's going to give him a chance.
I don't think he's coming back here. The Browns have plenty of running backs.
No, I agree with that. I just think he could make some team very happy if they give him the opportunity to be the back that he once was, if he can be the back that he once was. I don't question.
And I hope he can. You hope he can.
Yeah, I don't question his heart. I don't question his strength. I don't question
anything but his knee.
Yeah, but his ability to make that quick step, I think, is the first thing he's got to prove to NFL teams, that he can do that. Because in a year of rehabilitation for him last year, he did not have that giddy up. He was missing it. And I think we all knew it, but I think Browns fans are willing to have the patience to see what he would look like this season.
Sure.
To see if he would be able to do that after the recovery. It's still a gruesome injury. I don't know. I wouldn't bet against him.
There's no position, I think, in the NFL where it's as harsh when it comes to, okay, it's time to move on, than at running back. And I remember a month or two ago, I put together something about leading rushers in NFL history. And it was out of the top 15 or 20, or I forget the exact number, but the percentage that spent their entire career with one team. And it was only two guys. It was Walter Payton and Barry Sanders. Everybody else ends up usually late in their career going and spending a year or two not being what they once were for another team. You know, LaDainian Tomlinson did that. Keep looking. Jim Brown obviously was with one team the whole time. But there just aren't very many of those guys. And with Nick's questionable knee, and I say questionable, Andy, because of the things you just said, it was clear last year that he was not quite himself. And his yards per carry, which was always above 5, was not even at 4. And it's clear that he wasn't there. And in a very cutthroat business, the Browns had decided to cut bait and move on from Nick Chubb. I get it. Between Sampson, Judkins, Ford, you've got three guys there. Pierre Strong is still on the team. You have four guys who are young, fresh legs, and they're going to have a pretty nice battle too. Because I would think Judkins is the number one running back, or is part of a Lions type of Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery split, where And they've had the success with this where other teams are now copying it, because why? Everybody copies things in the NFL. That you're going to have those two guys and maybe Jerome Ford in the mix, maybe three guys. You know, is it Judkins and Ford? Could be. You know, who knows exactly? But I think you're going to have multiple guys carrying the football for the Browns this year, much like you had, and maybe even more so than when we had Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. You know, Kareem played a second running back, Andy, but he sure got a lot of touches here.
I wonder the value of a running back, as we do every I don't understand why the value of a running back isn't higher. When you think back, not last season, but two seasons ago, the average passing play percentage was around 61%. So probably meaning, and what that means is, for every 100 plays, 61 are passing attempts and 39 are rush attempts. Okay. And the Browns were the last season threw the ball 65% of the time. So yeah, that was higher than any other team in the NFL. Cincinnati was second. But when you look at the number of receivers compared to the number of running backs, you know, what do you got? Six wide receivers, seven wide receivers, and you're probably only running two running backs a game most times, right?
Yeah.
And those running backs are also, you know, guys that you'll throw the ball to. I just, like, to me, I don't
they
understand.
Seem pretty valuable, don't they?
Yeah, I don't understand how running backs became expendable in the NFL. Who touches the ball more? The quarterback, and probably the next guy would be your top running back. Your top running back's going to see the ball more than probably your best. What, your best receivers, maybe on an odd day,
10.
Has 10 or more, maybe 12 receptions in a game or targets.
Well, let's say,
and that running back's going to see the ball more than that. That's why I just
a really good wide receiver.
Mind.
Let's say 8 catches a game.
Yeah, with maybe 11 targets, 12,
maybe. Where a running back is going to be handed the ball 15 times a game.
And sometimes those targets are just because they were in the vicinity of a pass that went haywire.
That's kind of true.
So why is that? Like, I don't
you
get
know,
it.
You know why? I think it's this. I think the elite wide receivers, there's a big gap between the elite wide receivers and the okay wide receivers. And I don't know that gap is as big in running backs. I think there are a lot of really good running backs.
Is a little bit of this an indictment on offensive lines? Because you're saying
is it easier for
an offensive line to get to 2-1,000, 3-1,000, rather than trying to push forward and open up a hole for somebody?
I don't know. That's a good question. OTAs underway, 1 o'clock hour. Stefanski, Flacco, Pickett. You will hear them right here on 92.3 The Fan. Let's do our imitation of the NBA office of folks who have been on vacation, haven't watched the playoffs, and they're realizing right now that Oklahoma City and Indiana are each one game away from being your NBA finals. Ready?
Ah!
It's Baskin and Phelps on The Fan.